And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Warrior Connection. It is February 17th, 2013, and I'm Doug, Dr. Major Doug Rocky. I'll be joined also by Major retired from U.S. Air Force and RN, Denise Nichols. And we're also inviting everybody else to call in tonight. Again, another call-in show. If you want to call in and participate, please call 888-874-4888. Again, that'll be 888-874-4888. And next week, ladies and gentlemen, as those of us who participated in Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm know, the show will be coming on to you on February 24th. In the evening of the 24th and going into the 24th, into the 25th, is when we launched the ground assault leading up to Operation Desert Storm and everything that happened there. So again, a lot of history, a lot of events. As we come into this, it's obviously going to bother all the veterans. It's going to bother all the family members, people that we lost, people that were injured, they're ill, and everybody trying to get medical care. So again, a piece of history. Next week, again, ladies and gentlemen, we want everybody to call in with memories of Desert Storm and what happened on that fateful night on February 24th, 25th, and 1991. Denise, are you there by chance?
I am here.
Well, yeah, I mean, all this stuff is pretty important in all of our lives and is still continuing. We're still trying to get medical care for everybody. We still run into report after report that disavows any connection, even though all the internal memorandum and the directives confirm everything. What have you got new in the sense of legislation or memorials coming up?
Okay, there is legislation that's been introduced, you know, the first of the session, and they're just getting started. But we didn't get very far with our National Desert Storm Memorial last session. So Mr. Rowe, Dr. Rowe of Tennessee, Duncan of Tennessee, Young of Alaska, Palazzo Bishop, Mr. Wolf, Mr. Jones, Walter Jones, Mr. Cook, Walden Hall, Joyce. We've got about 20 of them signed on. It was reintroduced. That's House Bill, House Resolution H.R. 503 to authorize a National Desert Storm Memorial Association. So we need everybody writing and calling. The first thing I say is call to the D.C. office. Ask for the Veterans Affairs staffer for your congressman. Tell them that you want to see your congressman sign on as a co-sponsor to H.R. 503. Then while you've got him on the phone, ask him an email so that you can follow up with a written follow-up to them about the bill. There are other bills coming up, and I'm just starting to review. Just for veterans bills, I think there's about 26 in the hopper so far. Another interesting one that may affect us, because a lot of veterans have hearing problems and tinnitus, especially after the Gulf War. And so there's been a bill introduced, H.R. 369, in the House, and it's called, the title to it is Reducing Barriers to Veterans Benefit Act. And it basically is talking about setting up a presumption of service connection for certain veterans with tinnitus or hearing loss. And, you know, there is some ways to get that currently, but they are trying to make it an easier path, I think. So they gave us the data on hearing loss and disabilities, so the number of tinnitus disabilities has grown from 128,600 in fiscal year 1999 to 840,900 for fiscal year 2011. And that's an increase of 500%. And if you have tinnitus, you need to have your hearing evaluated because you probably have a hearing loss too. And hearing loss is the second leading service connection disability for veterans for all periods of service, accounting for 702,000 individuals.
Yeah, I know. I'm wearing them right now. I got my brand new hearing aids from the VA for both my left and the right ear, and they actually have a telephone function in them.
And the tinnitus, most common service-connected disability, for all periods of service, 841,000 individuals. that is really important. Your hearing, you need your hearing. So they're trying to make some changes to make it better for us. And so, again, this is a House bill so far, not a Senate bill. You know, sometimes we have a House bill and a duplicate Senate bill, and that makes it work faster. Otherwise, we have to go through the House, have it sent to the Senate, and it takes a little longer. But this is House Bill 369. And Mr. Beneski introduced it, and there's not a whole lot of co-sponsors on it. And so what we can do as veterans is really get on this and, you know, get our reps to co-sponsor, to sign on as a co-sponsor. What that does is, if you want a bill to really move up on the Hill in the House, you want to shoot for like two-thirds of the members of the House. That shows that there's strength behind it.
That's co-sponsors.
When it goes to committee for hearing, they know there's an interest, there's a push, and it just makes it easier to move that bill through and get it moving and get it done. And hopefully you want to get this done. You know, each session of Congress is like 2 years. But you want this moving. You want them introduced in the hopper and moving, not just referred to committee, but, you know, building strength by at least March or April to have chance of it getting in by that year. You do have another year before a change of Congress, and you have to start all over, have the bill reintroduced. And we've had to do those kind of things. But these are two bills I think could be easily supported by all of us. And again, the House bill for the memorial is House Bill 503. And the one for tinnitus is bill number, let me scan back up and give a bill number here, is House Bill 369. There's two more bills I put on. One is the Veterans Health Equity Act of 2013, and that's House Bill 257. They also have the same bill in the Senate, which is Senate Bill 49. Now, I think this will go through, but it certainly helps us to get more co-sponsors to go on board. And so you can look up the bill and read it. I also have a new Facebook page that you can ask to join that I'm putting up the bills I think we should all support, and I've got four or five now. And that's Gulf War Legislative. We will definitely cover the Gulf War whenever we have a bill, but there's other bills that impact our health care overall that we need to also show support and get co-sponsors for. So the one I just mentioned, 257 with a Senate bill, is basically we do not have a VA hospital in every 48 states in the continental U.S. And what it's saying is at least have service at one full-service hospital or VA in the state or receive comparable service provided by contract in the state you live. That's, to me, we all need to support that. If there's not a major VA hospital in your state, then they should be contracting it out. You should be getting equal care, whether it's contract fee basis, what have you. Okay? So that's one of the bills I put up that I felt like should not have any resistance from any veteran questioning. Why did I put that bill up for us to call and ask our reps and senators to sign on to? Let's see, what else did I put up on here? Oh, Veterans Timely Access to Health Care, introduced in the House, in House Bill 241. And they've only got five co-sponsors so far. We need more than five, that's for sure, guys. And all this is saying is it's setting up that you should get an appointment within a certain number of days when you go to the VA. We all know that's a problem. And what they're setting up is if the VA cannot meet that, they have to provide the data of why they're not meeting that and reporting it back to the Committee on Veterans Affairs. Okay, and I think they're asking for that quarterly. And what they're trying to do is be ensured that we're not having long waiting times. And what they're going to have to report back on, total number of veterans waiting by the following categories. Those waiting under 30 days for a scheduled appointment. Those waiting over 30 days but less than 60. Those waiting over 60 days but less than 4 months. Those waiting over 4 months but who cannot be scheduled within 6 months. Any remaining veterans who cannot be scheduled with the reasons therefore. Okay? So they're trying to get a handle on the waiting times for appointments. And this is for newly enrolled versus those who have been enrolled before October 1st, 2001. I don't know why they put that limitation, but I'll go along with it because at least it's a start to get a handle on waiting time for appointments. So again, that's House Bill number 241, introduced by Mr. Ross. And he's only got five co-sponsors so far. And so certainly we can make phone calls and get more co-sponsors than what they have. And that can help us move this bill along and get it acted upon quicker. Let's see. There's one for Women, Veterans, and Other Health Care Improvement Act. Okay. And that's a Senate bill sponsored by Senator Patty Murray, introduced January 24th. And basically, it's a good bill. I see no problems with it either. And it's Senate Bill 131. So that would be a call to the Senate to help get co-sponsors on that so we can move the bill along. So those are the bills that, out of 26 so far, I think I've identified, what, four?
Yeah, I think so. But, ladies and gentlemen, Denise is going over these bills, but I'm going to give a straight caution, okay? We have to understand, the VA is already responsible to provide us medical care as required by law, and they just don't do a very good job in too many instances. So what you have to do, ladies and gentlemen, mothers, fathers, children, anybody, if you have a veteran, the veteran himself, you have to be calling the VA all the time to get your appointment. It's kind of like the squeaky wheel is going to get the grease. The more times you call, the more times you bother them while being very polite and, totally getting all the information in, the better off you're going to be. Don't count on the House or the Senate passing a bill that's going to get the VA to change their operations. They're already supposed to do it, and they're just not doing it. And so, again, these bills in the House and the Senate are there to try to help. But, again, there is no accountability. And that's one of the problems we ran into from day one, going all the way back to Vietnam and before Vietnam and up to the current time with everything. As we go into Operation Desert Storm, I'm looking at the Gulf War Veterans Information System report from February of 2008.
Okay, Doug, before you go there, can we have the, let me mention about how many have died this month?
Sure, definitely.
We're about halfway through. And what I've tracked so far, and I haven't gone as extensively, but it'll grow from this number. But the 15th of February, I had 12 listings of Gulf War veteran deaths. Now, out of that 12, we had four in the 40 age group, two Army and two Marines. 40 years old is too young to be dying. Now, can I say it's all attributable and caused by Gulf War illness, Gulf War exposures? No, I can't, but I can certainly bring the question up that this needs to be tracked. When you are losing the veterans, and, a number of years ago, we were losing them in their 30s. These were our youngest ones over there. If they were 18 then, and we're 22 years into this now, that's 40. And if they're dying in their 40s, that's kind of unusual. And that's, and 50s. It's still young. But, I really think that we need to push them for greater tracking, gosh, monthly, bi-monthly. What's happening with these 40-year-olds that they're dying? What is the cause of death? What's the age? How does it compare to civilian life? And where were they in theater? What unit and location? This would help us narrow down some questions on the Gulf War exposure if we did this kind of stuff. And, you know, I want people to recognize that these people were people, and they served their country. And at 40, many of them married, may still have small children. And those people may not be getting coverage through the VA. Their spouses, their families may not be getting assistance. If you had your claim in and hit the 10-year point, yeah, okay, your spouse, children may get the benefits that were meant for them. But I just heard from one of them that died, gosh, 05, 07, and he was rated for PTSD. He had many medical problems, including early cardiac problems. He had to have stents put in, and he died suddenly in front of his kids from a heart attack or a blood clot, one of the two. And the kids are young, still going to be going to college. His wife took up the cause because, being short of 10 years on his rating, they weren't going to do anything. She kept after him. She just notified me a month or a month and a half ago, recently, that she'd stayed on him. And it was not so much for her benefits, but for the children, for his children carrying his name, that they would have the benefits that should have been theirs without this fight. So from around 05-07 till now, from when he died, she kept the battle going. It should not be that difficult. It should never be that difficult. She has a job, nurse, going on with her life, but she kept the thing going because her children should be helped. Their college benefits, things like that. It was not so much about her getting a widow's compensation or anything like that. It was about her children. He earned this. He's no longer here. At least help the dependent children get them a good education.
Hey, Denise, you're dropping off again. You need to speak up good and clear.
But that's the taps for the day. Now we can continue on.
Okay. Well, I'm looking right now at the Gulf War Veterans Information System. For those that aren't aware, this was compensation and pension statistics reports that the Department of Veteran Affairs was putting out quarterly. And the last time we really got one was way back in February of 2008. We've had data and casualty data that's come out continuously. We've been tracking all of that. What we do know during Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, the number of military that participated in that was 696,842 individuals. That's the number that got deployed and went over there and did all the stuff along with us. What we do now, and back in, as of February 20, 2008, the official statistic was the number that were living was only 618,000. And as you've just heard, we continuously die, and I know I've lost three on my own team in the last year. They were primary people. And we know from conversations with General Shinseki and Colonel Gingrich and all the other ones in the actual reports that the number of claims that have been filed exceeds over 300,000. So we're looking at 50% of those participated in Desert Storm have now filed claims with the Department of Veteran Affairs in an attempt to get medical care for all the medical problems that they have with them. And that comes about from a whole thing. What we do know during Desert Shield and Desert Storm, we had less than 1,000 casualties during that seven-month period. And now we're up at over 300,000. Again, its mirror image has been put out by, again, the Institute of Medicine for OIF-OEF. So it's all these complex toxic exposures. I mean, it's just a horrific nightmare. What you need to do, ladies and gentlemen, is make sure you got your claims put in. What I would highly suggest, if you haven't done this, again, the post-deployment physical assessment form, and that's a Department of Defense form 2796. It's posted up. You can contact Denise or any of us, and we'll get it to you. It's been posted on our various websites. Again, DD form 2796. And when you go in for your physical appointments, if you have had any changes or you remember something, I highly recommend that you complete this form and then take it with the interior appointment, whether you're going to the VA or going to a military physician or a civilian physician, to do it and then keep track of it. The VA should have your original form provided to them by the government, you know, when you put in your claims and that, and that should be in the records. But we know with the GAO has confirmed that a lot of the forms were disappearing. Yeah, I mean, just one day there was a fire and they've been destroyed. So, I mean, we're looking at incredible, incredible problems. One thing that we do have coming up here, and Denise had mentioned this.
Let's stop here for just a moment. Everybody, even the Operation Iraqi Freedom, qualify for, and this is not for a compensation and pension, but a Gulf War registry exam. Those people that you need to contact to get in are at least one in the state, but there's a person called an environmental medical agent. And they're the ones that do these exams, and they did them for Agent Orange, for the atomic vets, and for the Gulf War vets. And it now stretches and includes the OIF personnel. This is a good registry exam, taking track of all the exposures that you can recount. And good basic exam, good starting point. And I would recommend people to take advantage of that. Know about it. Ask about it. Contact me. I'll get you the name of the person to contact in your state. And because sometimes it's hard to find that person in the VA. You know, you ask about it and no one seems to know. But they're there. The exams are ongoing. And so I'll help you with that. You can contact me, Denise Nichols, on Facebook or dsnurse1@yahoo.com. I'll help you with that. And then I have a new page with just some starting points on claims, listing where to find a service officer, different organizations, county service officers, and the very basics. I'm not a claims person. I'm not certified. I can just help you as I've helped others. Here's the starting point. Get you a service officer that knows about Gulf War claims. And you've got to, you know, put your records together from before the war, where you were healthy, to your records, whether they be in the VA system or civilian doctors. Get your lab work. Get any diagnostic testing. Organize it in a notebook. And highlight it. Read the basic reg of what the presumptions are. Your letter does not go to Gulf War illness. You stress the exposures or the presumptions for that have been allowed now for Gulf War. If you've had an injury, like if you're having spine problems and you're a paratrooper, and you had an injury and have that record, that will help you. The injury claims seem to go faster than our Gulf War illness. So those are clues to the wise. The other thing is to get letters from your doctors that say, in his opinion, it's more than likely that it's due to service than otherwise. Okay, those are key words. There's a lot of semantics and words that you need to know about to try to get those type of letters and documentation.
Denise, you got to speak up. You're dropping off.
That's the starting point. So, yeah, if you haven't yet, we fought to get the extension on the presumptions. We'll be working on it again in, 2016, I think it is, or 2017. We're trying to fight and get it extended, hopefully eventually get the date removed. But if you're having problems, and I've talked to many vets that have had problems. They have not gone to the VA, haven't put it all together. It's time to wake up. You got to take care of yourself and your family. Back to you, Doug.
Okay, one thing's extremely important, ladies and gentlemen. Again, you know, Warrior Connection, the Progressive Radio Network, we're moving forward, trying to get you information, trying to get you resources. For the archives for the show, we'll put up the environmental agents listing and the contact point for the RIS. That's War Injuries Resource Centers. Again, we've got three of those across the nation so that you can get to them. But, you know, one thing that I found out, and again, as I've been to the VA, I've been going to the VA twice a week, two to three times a week now for over a month, my own care, after yanking chains all around. And Again, every day I find more and more individuals. It's important to understand that the physiological problems come from these complex toxic exposures. They can develop over a period of time, and sometimes what we see is there seem to be a minor problem that they continue to escalate to develop into a more serious problem. The neuromuscular problems, all of the brain problems, the hearing problems, the explosive diarrheas, and all of this stuff are just literally devastating everybody.
Sleep problems
are tearing everything apart because it combines on the PTSD and the injuries.
Right.
I know with the weather changing here, I don't know, here in Illinois, Denise, our weather is a couple days after year. I mean, the weather changes are just absolutely devastating. You're 60 degrees today, aren't you?
Yep, we had upwards of 50, I think.
Yeah, and we got, you know, so we got the next snow band will be coming through here. So Illinois, we're down here at 30 degrees, 35 degrees today. But again, the barometric pressure changes have a horrible effect on all of this stuff because of so much complex neuromuscular problems. So again, this is extremely important to keep track of this stuff, to get the information, to contact your doctor and talk to your doctor.
And let me, you know, talk about, I brought out a bill on tendonitis and hearing loss. Well, you know, if you're military and you were Arnold, you got loud noise, airplanes, loud noises, generators, loud noises, hearing loss. But the tendonitis, if they do complete workup, and there's a little percussion hammer thing they put in, I've forgotten the name of that test, they'll come up abnormal. And I want to point out that I went through the registry exams. I was called back by an audiologist who had been military, hired back to do the DOD registry exam. And he had me come back and repeat it. And I'm going, okay, what's going on? Is it noise damage? And he goes, well, maybe, but that's not what I'm looking at. And I had the tendonitis, and he said, gosh, it's like you have ototoxicity. That's damage to the nerve of the ear. And usually you can get that if you have high-dose antibiotics for a long time. Certain antibiotics can cause that nerve damage. High consistent use of aspirin. Chemotherapy. I had none of the above. So that connects. We're having vision problems. They really haven't looked at that. And I know, Doug, you've gone through vision problems.
Yeah, the vision problems, remember, and I'm going to understand, we've got, on the vision problems, we have the complex exposures. Colonel Dr. Saunders Carnegie-Both, another doctor on Bowers Radars, he brought all this up. We've talked about the sand problems and everything else. But all the complex things in the sand and the chemical compounds, radiologic materials got into the eye. If you were definitely around any of the DU impacts or cleaning that up or doing any work around the DU impact sites, which is just huge all over Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Somalia, the Balkans, Libya, Syria, and then also down Lebanon.
Well, and one of the things you have to realize is your eyes, like any organ in your body, has to have good blood supply to the nerves, to the muscles, to the organ. And we have, a certain percentage have a hypercoagulation developing. Dr. Ron Bach is now looking at it, Minneapolis VA, and we're pending publication of his studies. But if you're having blood clotting problems, it's going to affect your eyes. If you have blood pressure problems, it's going to affect your eyes. So, and usually you have to be, 100% or something to get your eyes looked at in the VA. But you can certainly push for an exam, and at least push them to have an exam done. Whether it provide more care, you'll have to push for, right? But you at least should get your eyes examined thoroughly. We are having vision problems. It has been developing all along. The other thing we're seeing, calcium in the bones, in the teeth, okay? We have injuries occurring and have been for a long time. You know, we picked up this early with the disc problem in the back, the collapsed disc, the degeneration in the spine. And that's been occurring from early on. I think the UK vets picked it up and started pushing for bone density testing. But, and then we saw the dental problems developing.
Yeah, we're looking at the bone density and all those some dental things, because with uranium and other radioactive materials and complex things, these cause decalcification and dephosphorization in the teeth and the bones. And so they just degrade. It's not, and they deteriorate. It's not a disease. It's not a thing where they're doing anything else. It's just a complete deterioration of the bone structure. And again, these health effects are totally confirmed in the internal memorandum. For example, for depleted uranium, the Colonel J. Edgar Wakayama briefing to the Pentagon in 2002-2003 confirmed all of these things, including confirming the cancers and confirming leukemias for exposure to DU and all the radioactive materials. On the eyesight, we're getting a lot of support. I know we're getting support, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the Midwest. The Barnes Jewish Hospital, Dr. Rodney Custer in St. Louis, Missouri, is looking at this and providing care to us now. So they're aware of it, and they're seeing it, and they're coming up with protocols and procedures to help them restore vision or optimize remaining vision. So again, it's out there, but you have to be yelling and screaming at the VA, taking the information into the doctors. A lot of stuff we provide you here on the Progressive Radio Network, and get the stuff at other websites. Denise has got the stuff where they've got the Facebook groups together. The old grassroots piece, which was what Sonny Miller and Charlie Jinks put together at Trap Rock, is up there. You get a lot of information. Joyce Riley has an incredible amount of information on Beyond Treason. Paul Sullivan's groups and the other ones were trying to get the information posted for you. But again, you have to dig in, get the stuff, and hand carry it to your doctors and just demand care. It's that simple.
And you have to be polite in doing that and try to, you know, base it, you know, provide your records of where you were healthy and where it's changed. And, you know, you just want help. You want them to examine and look for the problems. And either you have or don't, but, hey, we need the appropriate exams and diagnostic procedures done. And if there's any research that I can help provide you to help the doctors look a little further, it's amazing to me that a lot of the doctors that say, why should we take this to them? Well, they can look at it or they can't, but, you know, if you highlight it and hand it to them and say, this is why I'm concerned. Have you seen this? You know, they may not have seen it. They're not keeping up with all the research. They have tons of patients to see. So if you provide it to them, at least you're opening the door for them to look, to think about it, and then go back and work them some more. And, yeah, it takes a little effort to print off the research paper, and I'm trying to provide those links to the actual papers instead of just the abstract, so that you can help provide them information that not only helps you, but maybe somebody else.
Now, again, is anybody that's called in and joined us? Again, we welcome you to call 888-874-4888. Has anybody called in at all?
Don't think so. Let's move on. We're at anniversary date time. Trying to remember what happened this date, but, you know, we had the air war going on, and we're approaching the ground war.
Yeah, at this time, ladies and gentlemen, at 3rd MedCom, we were totally plotting and continuously monitoring and confirming the chemical and biological agents, the radiological materials being spread throughout the theater of operations. And one thing that we do know, again, this stuff goes hundreds and hundreds of miles. It doesn't come up and settle down within a mile or, you know, talking everything, what everybody knows, the Army stuff, within a click of this stuff. This stuff goes for hundreds and hundreds of miles. Both Denise Nichols and I and others, again, when Camisea was blown up, we put out the warnings. But again, we were hundreds of miles away, and yet Dr. Bernard Rauscher sent personal letters to a lot of us confirming the exposures. And again, we continue to have all those things put out. So again, it's gathering the information, putting together, and ensuring that you get the care for yourself. Because we have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, we have over, when you put them all together, we're looking at 1.5 million, maybe 2 million U.S. military casualties involved in all the operations that we have done in the Middle East, Iraq, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, and that everything, Kuwait, going down in Somalia and then throughout the Balkans. It's just a nightmare of medical problems, and the VA is overwhelmed. The things that I found, and again, this is a personal experience with PTSD, ladies and gentlemen, we have to work on this. The PTSD, as we all know, is a function of peeing in your pants scared, which goes back to antiquity with combat. The other thing is a function of the incredible neurotoxicity. This is the medical toxic exposure throughout the brain and out the stuff that are affecting the brain. Again, that is confirmed. Dr. Bob Haley's work, I mean, I was involved in it. In other words, it totally confirms it without a doubt at all. And we have that stuff. And then the other thing we're running into, and this is a part of the war, is the realization and the understanding of the ethical and moral crises that each of us have gone to war are facing because of what we have done, what we've been involved in, or what we saw or what we heard. And again, you have to, extremely important, if you run into those ethical moral crises, that you seek help immediately. I mean, we put it out there before, and I, you know, again, we want to put it out one more time. Anybody that needs help with ethical moral crises can contact Chaplain Thomas Mills at the Danville VA Medical Center in Danville, Illinois. Again, 1-800-320-8387. And you can also contact the RIST in Washington, D.C., and they will help you up there also. And the RIST in Washington, D.C. to contact is 1-800-722-8340. And so again, these are people that have confirmed and said they will help all veterans and family members if they need any help.
One of the things we want to point out is you can be diagnosed with PTSD from stressors, and the psychology consults will do that for you at the VA. But the other thing is if you have the physical damage from nerve agents, whatever exposure, and you have neurological damage, you can get secondary symptoms that may sound like PTSD, may be termed differently, but it's a secondary effect of dealing with this and dealing with trying to keep your life going and having problems doing it, and then reflecting on the problems we've had for 22 years of getting them to pay attention and to trust the vets. And, you know, we've had to fight for 22 years to get the proof and the research to show that this is real. This is not just stress. Okay? Hear me well. Not stress, not just stress. You can have physiological damage causing other problems of coping, whether they diagnose it as PTSD from a war stressor or from secondary effects of physiological damage.
Now, along with all the medical problems, again, that we're seeing, and ladies and gentlemen, Denise, I know both of us, we continuously work on this daily. We hear about this daily. When I'm into the VA, no matter where I am, whether we're in Danville or I'm in Indianapolis or in Washington, or we're talking to anybody, we keep seeing and hearing these problems all over the place. We keep hearing and seeing the frustration that everybody is facing. And the utter frustration on trying to get medical care when you don't understand what's happening to you can have a devastating effect. So again, the support network is extraordinarily important. And don't give up. I mean, again, it's perseverance, and everybody in the military understands perseverance.
And, Doug, you know, I'm going to interject here. We're coming up to springtime, okay? Vietnam vets for years pushed to get reunions for their Vietnam vets by unit, get together. And, you know, I'm going to put out the call again. There are some people that have had reunions in their groups. They've gotten out of Facebook, you know, trying to contact their members. You know, a reunion group to get together, see how each other are doing, catch up with each other, a social event, but also to, you know, there's usually one in the group that's, you know, taken the step, at least one, and gone to the VA. And you can help each other. Not only that, but it's a good time when the weather gets better to have meetups in this state. And we have some state pages formed up, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Illinois, you know, Gulfport Desert Storm in the state on Facebook. We don't have all of them, but we have 19. Could, you know, anybody else that doesn't have a state page up can get started, and we'll direct people to join the state page, and you could have a reunion of just the ones that served on the Gulf in your state, in your city. and help each other. Help share the knowledge, help share and lean on each other. The families can get support. I mean, you need that support network. At the VA, on the PTSD, they have groups that they put together at the vet centers, which are off campus and separate from the VA, the vet centers that the Vietnam vets fought to get done. Those are support mechanisms, but we need to have family and vets come together, help each other, you know, might be driving to the VA together or meeting people there on their appointment dates and saying, you know, how are you doing? You know, do you need some help? Do you need some information to help you? You know, it's helping each other and the family's helping each other. You know, I think about the civilian world. My husband went through cardiac surgery, and the education that goes to the cardiac patients and to the post-open heart surgery, of teaching them, educating them, diet, all the things. But you also meet other patients, other people that went through the same thing. And you can help each other and encourage each other. Keep with your exercise. Keep with your rehab. Yeah, diet. Hey, you're blowing your diet. Let's talk about that again type thing. And, you know, it's a shame VA doesn't have that kind of support mechanism. But we can do it ourselves. Think about reunions. Think about meeting up with others. And you don't feel so alone. Your family member may not feel so much alone. Something to consider as we approach spring. We're in February. March, April's coming. And then the kids get out of school. So, you know, the spring's a good time to try to do some things like that.
Now, as we've been talking everything memorials, and we mentioned this again. Denise had brought this up on the last radio show. And I've had the time, and I've confirmed everything. The Illinois Department of Veteran Affairs will be hosting a Desert Storm Remembrance Ceremony on Thursday, February 28th at 11 a.m. at the Illinois Military Museum at Camp Lincoln, Illinois in Springfield, Illinois. The point of contact in the Illinois Department of Veteran Affairs coordinating this event is Gwen Deal, Gwen, G-W-E-N, Deal, D-I-E-H-L. Her phone number is in Springfield, Illinois, is area code 217-785-4575. Again, the Desert Storm Memorial for the state of Illinois will be at Camp Lincoln at 11 a.m. on February 28th. The point of contact is Ms. Gwen Deal, and she's a Desert Storm vet. And
you gotta be there, Doug?
She was in the 3rd ACR.
Are you going to go, Doug?
Pardon?
Are you going to attend?
My plan is, yeah, Rollo and I are going to try and get what remains of Bowers Raiders over there. We're talking about it. Again, for us, it's only about 90 miles, so it's a fairly simple drive. And again, if the weather is good, yeah, we're going to try to. We've been sharing information with them already. Again, we, you know, want to remember a member of Bowers Raiders and our team, Sergeant First Class John Sitton. He's the one that I wrote that poem for. That, remember, I did that first reading when we were in the U.S. Senate. Boy, that was a long time ago, isn't it?
I want to stress something to the ones that are going to do these things and go to reunions or go to, you know, when Illinois is doing this. Hey, guys, gals, print out some old business card with your name, your email, your contact info. Everybody do that. Exchange those with each other. Connect. Network. That's what it all starts out being. Network. And that means, hey, have those business cards ready. Hand them out to each other. Get together on Facebook. Get everybody on Facebook and, you know, get them to the Illinois page or whatever you want to do. But you make that connection and you keep it going. Back to you, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things we can do, but again, we're trying to provide you information, resources, suggestions, and ideas. As the weather is changing,
I hope you get the risk maybe to send a whole stack of their pamphlets overnight mail. Get the risk to send some packets up there, their brochures, and have them available. They have a little pamphlet that they can send out, Doug, that could be there on a table for the vets.
Yeah, that's we're starting to work stuff up, I know, for the state. I've been contacting and talking to them throughout the state VA. and getting good, very good response since we started this contact.
Yeah, I call Washington and get them to mail you out a whole bunch of those. There's a lot of outreach material that never gets out there, and it just takes us, you know, taking a role in it and making it happen.
Now, as the weather starts changing, again, we see this in all the changes of the seasons, the medical problems get real complex as the weather starts changing, with the incredible neuromuscular problems that everybody has and the digestive things and the rashes. One thing that we're seeing, again, we've all lived with this, we hear it continuously, these things will flare up whenever the temperature and the pressure starts changing substantially. So you need to be prepared to get to your doctor, whether it be the VA or the military or civilian physician, and keep this all under control. Another thing for the neuromuscular stuff, and this is what I'm learning, again, we've had a program on this in the archives already, acupuncture is an incredibly beneficial thing. The VA is finishing their acupuncture study. The RIST in Washington, D.C. has just finished their acupuncture study, and they definitely have found out that it definitely works to alleviate some of the stuff. The other thing, too, is you can use a TENS unit, the ultrasound, and, again, the deep muscle massage through physical therapy at the VA or your doctor, wherever you can get to. The other thing that works good, and I've been into it myself, is a therapy pool. There's a hot water therapy pool where they have an individual working one-on-one with you to maintain function and help you do exercises in the pool.
Again, and dry heat saunas, but be careful.
Yeah, you got to be extraordinarily careful, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, all of this stuff is done. I know, Denise, if you remember, we did this when we were down in Texas on the dry heat sauna. But when you go into these, ladies and gentlemen, you have to have medical support available with you. Don't just go doing it on your own. You need to do it under medical supervision.
And you need to have some nice spring clean water, not bottled water, and be hydrating as you're in there. You know, take a plastic bottle. Don't take glass in them, but, yeah, plastic, something that won't break. But you need to continually hydrate while you're sitting there. And that's very, very important. And don't overdo it. You know, you go in for maybe 5 minutes the first time, build up to 10.
Again, under medical supervision. I know, right. Denise and I both did it, and we had a nurse and a doctor right there. So we had total medical supervision, and obviously we were both trained, so we were taking care of each other. The other thing, too, and I want to remind this again while we're talking about all this stuff, simple precautions you can take care of. Again, with the weather is changing, remember your clothing, trying to keep warm, keep dry, and all this other stuff. The other thing that's extraordinarily important is your diet. I mean, I can't stress enough, ladies and gentlemen, again, talking to my doctors and talking to everybody in research, and Denise has found this all out. Ladies and gentlemen, once you've been to war and you've been affected with this, you can't drink. I mean, you'd like to have a beer or some alcohol, maybe one or two here or there, but ladies and gentlemen, the alcohol definitely interferes with the nutrition and the oxygen supply and all this other stuff, and cleaning out all the toxins out of your body, so that affects everything.
And it's, and you're going to be very changed on your tolerance level. I mean, if you used to be able to chug back quite a few beers, ain't going to be the same, guys. You may have one beer and have the full effect. So you need to be aware of that. That's how our bodies have changed, and no, it's not good. The occasional, red wine's probably better for you. But again, you have to cut down even lower than a normal person.
Now, the other thing, too, and Denise, I mean, you go back and forth between sea level and high altitude because you live at about 6,000 feet.
Yep.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, again, the perfusion, oxygen perfusion, as we go up in altitude is very substantially different. And so, again, with all of the respiratory problems, reactive airway disease and everything else that's confirmed from the DU exposures and the chemical and pesticides and the hazmat, and especially the burn pits now for OIF, OEF, OND vets, all this stuff is extremely, extremely important. And so respiratory problems are there. Again, you have to talk to your physician directly about that and get a test done. One thing that they have done is when you go for a respiratory function test, it's called a pulmonary function test. And what they have done with me, and we've had a big discussion about this, and I think Denise and I have been able to do some teaching on this, is when they're doing a pulmonary function, they're not looking for how well you can function when you get an optimal thing. They're looking at where it's going wrong as you do the test. One thing that all of us have learned, again, trying to blow the pulmonary function test, is our lungs are so bad that we get into trouble. And then what they have tried to do is administer some of the various medications. Again, these are steroid drugs, again, to help you with your lung function. And that only masks the problems. The other thing, too, is when you're going into your physician, and again, it's a primary and secondary survey, it's extremely important that you're not just sedentary and then go in and get checked.
Right.
We're seeing incredible problems that develop if they do the primary and secondary survey, take your blood pressure, your pulse, and everything, after you, say, with the doctor, you've walked up and down the stairs or around the floor for a little while, because the problems that you see are exacerbated by activity, as they are exacerbated by weather, as they're exacerbated by stress. So,
and we've talked about a couple of things here. Number one, on the pulmonary function, and Doug, you had this done in Dallas, the challenge, the substance given to see how we responded with a challenge substance, and it was very definite on both of us.
Yeah, mine was bad. I mean, when the VA in Birmingham had stopped the whole thing, they were doing the live arterial blood gases on mine, and it was so bad that they stopped it 5 minutes into it because it was just deteriorating horribly.
Right, and the other thing is, we have to be aware of flu season, try to avoid people with colds and hazards because it's just going to hit you harder. The other thing that I wanted to bring out, you went through diet. I look at some of the pictures of people that I met early on after the war or during the war, and the amount of weight they have put on. Number one, they need to have their thyroid levels drawn and other lab work done. But the amount of weight that I see being put on is just like a walking cardiac waiting to happen. And we're going to be more susceptible. If you went to CPR classes, they talked about risk factors. Family background, your diet, all the different risk factors that pile up and make you more susceptible. We'll add in another one of the environmental exposures. Then add in that if you're not keeping the weight under control and finding out why you can't keep that weight under control and changing your diet and working on it, you've added a risk factor 100 times more. So, as I look at these pictures, I'm in horror. As an old cardiac nurse, cardiac ICU nurse, clinical specialist, I'm sitting there going, guys, you got to find something that works. Alter your diet. Get some diet management skills. Have your thyroid checked because that can, problems with weight. The irritable bowel syndrome can cause weight loss. And you've got to get that weight off. You're only hurting yourselves and maybe leaving this earth too soon, leaving your kids and family behind.
Now, the other thing, too, again, with the Institute of Medicine confirming multiple chemical sensitivity and all those medical problems, one thing that has showed up in our team, and again, we did this report, the Institute of Medicine, the additional environmental exposures that you have. You're in an agricultural area. I know Sergeant First Class Rollo Doff, the hero of Bowers Raiders, who was forced to take care of Schwarzkopf during Desert Storm because they were both, big enough to do each other. Rollo was as big as he was. They're 7 foot tall, 250 pounds. But again, what we're having, again, is pesticides and everything in agricultural. You have to be very careful on this stuff within your home and with the exposures. The same thing with all the chemical solvents. You can
the organophosphate pesticides, the spraying that goes onto the agricultural fields and around your home is going to increase the potential for you to go on the slippery slope downward. So you've got to be aware of the exposures in your area and in your home.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're running out of time again. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward. Warrior Connection, we're trying to get information to you, giving you resources. Contact the websites. Look at the archives. Contact dsnurse at yahoo.one. Look at the other things, and we can provide help to you. Denise, thank you again. Ladies and gentlemen, next week will be the anniversary of Desert Storm Ground Combat. It'll be a definite call-in show, and we'll look at all the history of what happened. So next week, please call 888-874-4888. And if you have information ahead, let us know.
We want to hear from you, the veteran and the spouse. Please call in.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. God bless America, and let the vets have to take care of themselves. We got to do it for ourselves and demand help. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening.